Morning. Today's stop in Shabbos Kuf Chav Ches 128. We are on Kuf Chav Zayin Amud Beis. We are starting at the two dots towards the bottom of the Amud. And a lengthy discussion that we're going to be having this morning in terms of Muksa. We're going to go back to the topic of Muksa, even though the general theme of this parak is Tirchi Yisera, Chachamim's desire that we don't overexert ourselves on Shabbos. But nevertheless, we go back to Muksa because we go back to the Mishnah that we saw, that we started the 18th parak with, on Kuch of Avon Mebez, and there in the Mishnah. So the Mishnah talks about not overexerting. If we have to clear out a room because there's Hachnasas Orchim or there's Tama Torah, so we can clear the room out, provided that what we're taking out of the room is not Muksa. And so the Mishnah gives a number of examples of things that are not Muksa. And then the Mishnah gives a list of examples that things are Muksa. And so what we're going to be doing now is we're going to be going over the list of items in the Mishnah which are not Muksa, which are Muksa. We're going to discuss why they're not, why they are, and so that's going to be a good part of today's daf. A couple of other topics coming up in the course of today's daf as well, but that's where we're beginning. We are starting at the two dots towards the bottom of the Amud and Kuf Chav Zayin Amud Beis with the words Truma, Nei Truma Tahora. It's the second wide line, for a line that covers from end to end of the margin. Mifanim Truma Tahora. So one is allowed to move Truma Tahora. So that means to say that it's truma that was taken off, and the truma is in a state of tahara, so it's edible. And the Gemara's question is very simple, pshita. Okay, so we know that. Meaning, so if it's truma tahara, of course it's not muksa, because it's something that's edible. So the Gemara says, lo tzricha demancha biyad Yisrael. So the Gemara says, yeah, that's true, but it's currently right now being held by the Yisrael, meaning he took off the truma, he didn't give it to the kohen yet. So ma'u detema kevin galachazi le'aser. So I might have thought that, look, the Yisrael is not allowed to eat it. In other words, what he needs to do now is he needs to give it to the Kohen. And so since it's not right for him, he can't eat it. So therefore, for him, for the Yisrael, you may have considered it to be Muksa. Kamash Malan. Came into Chazal Kohen, Shapidami. So the Gemara says, yeah, but it's fit for the Kohen. Meaning, okay, so for the Yisrael himself, it's not fit. But the next step we know is going to happen is that he's going to give it to the Kohen. It's fit for the Kohen. So objectively, it is edible food. And so therefore, it's not Muksa. Udamai, we go on to the next topic, which is Demai. So we know that when you purchase your produce from an Am Haaretz in Eretz Yisrael, so most of the Am Haaretz take off Trumas HaMaisos, but some don't. As a Chomer, the rabbis impose that every single time I buy produce from an Am Haaretz, I have to take off Trumas HaMaisos. That produce that's purchased from an Am Haaretz is what's called in Halacha Demai. And so therefore, you're not allowed to eat Demai until your Mafish Trumas HaMaisos. The Mishnah tells us that nevertheless, it is not Muksa, and you can move the Demai. So the Gemara's question now is very simple. Halochazilei, again, it's the same question. So, but it's not fit for you. So the Gemara says, Kivin deibai mafke leilanachse v'havi ani v'chazilei hashana michazilei. So the Gemara gives an answer over here. By the way, all these Gemaras that we're going through right now, the same Gemaras that we went through in the 7th Perek of Brachos, we're going to do this again in Erevin, meaning this discussion regarding this particular categories of food are a repeated discussion throughout Shas, so we get to review this again and again. So here's just another round of this. We did this already not so long ago, back in the 7th Perek of Brachos. So the Gemara says over here that what we're describing over here is that Demai, yes, it's true you're not allowed to eat it, and yes, it's true you have to be Mafish Trumas HaMaisos, but Demai, there are allowances for the consumption of Demai. Notably, if somebody's poor, you can eat Demai. Okay, so one of the allowances that the Chachamim gave is that for an ani, so an ani can eat demai. So potentially you can become an ani. You can give up all your possessions. We just actually discussed this in yesterday's daf. You can give up all your possessions and you can become an ani. So in theory, the demai is something that's edible by you. Now we learned in the Mishnah, ma'achilas anim demai v'esa achsanya demai. Actually, two groups of people are allowed to eat demai. The poor people can eat demai. The achsanya. Rashi over here on our daf says achsanya. It's talking about in Jewish army. Jewish army that goes through town, the demand, the requirement is that the members, the community members of the town have to host the soldiers. Rashi over here describes them as being Jewish soldiers, Jewish soldiers as part of a Jewish army. Every time this comes up, you're not always going to find this pshat, but that's Rashi anyway in our Gemara. So it's a Jewish soldier from a Jewish army, and he's also given a dispensation when he can eat demai as well. The Am Rav Huna Tana, Rav Huna has taught the following brisa: Bishamei Omri Min Ma'achilin Masanim Demai Vesachsanya Demai Beis Hillel Omri Ma'achilin Masanim Demai Vesachsanya Demai. Okay, and on top of that, it's also machlokes between Bishamei and Beis Hillel. We of course follow like Beis Hillel that these two groups of people are allowed to eat demai, the poor people and the soldier. So what comes out now is that at least in theory you can eat the demai. It's unlikely. In other words, you're going to have to give up all your possessions. Most people don't want to do that. But at least it could happen. And since it's a theoretical possibility that you can eat the demai, so therefore it's not going to be a moksa. Okay, that's the Gemara's response to demai. And just as a side discussion, which we're not going to have, but I'll bring it up, is that how are you giving up all your possessions? Meaning we're talking about on Shabbos. So what the Gemara is advocating over here, or at least offering, is that you're going to give up all your possessions on Shabbos. You could be mafkir on Shabbos. Sounds that way from the Gemara. Okay. Anyway, that's certainly another point of interest. We go on. Maisarishon shenit l'trumaso. Okay, and what else is not muksa? So if you have maisarishon, where the truma is taken off the maisarishon. Now, what that means to say that when you give the 10% to the Levi, that's maisarishon, so now the Levi in turn has to take 10% of that and give it over to the Kohen. And this is what's called trumas maiser. And the Levi cannot eat his maisarishon until he takes off the trumas maiser and gives it to the Kohen. Okay. And so what the Mishnah is telling us is that when I have Maaser Rishon, where the Trumas Maaser is taken off, so now this Maaser Rishon is not Muksa, because it's edible. And again, the Gemara's response is very simple, Pshita. Well, that's obvious. So, Lo Tzricha Sheikdimu B'Shibolin. V'nitla Himena Truma Maaser, V'lo Nitla Himena Truma Gedola. So the Gemara says, okay, so I'll give you a Chiddush. Chiddush is as follows. Is that what happened was, is that the Levi went to the farm, and he took his Maaser Rishon, and he took his Maaser Rishon before the farmer even had an opportunity to take off the Truma Gedola. Now, in terms of the Hafrashas Trumas HaMaisos, there is a very specific order. First, you have to take off Bikurim. First, the farmer has to take off Bikurim. Then he has to take off Truma Gedola. Then he has to give off Maaser Rishon to the Levi. Then, in turn, the Levi has to take from the Maaser Rishon Trumas Maaser. I know I said that all very quickly, but that is the order in which the Hafrashas Trumas Maisros need to take place. And then I didn't even get into Maaser Sheni, Maaser Ani. Anyway, but there's an order. The point is very simple. There's a very specific order. Let's say the Levi goes out to the field. Now, before the grain is harvested and before the grain is processed, and he goes out to the field and he takes for himself his Maaser Rishon. He takes 10%. Okay. He shouldn't have done it, but he did. And under those circumstances, now that he has Maaser Rishon, so what is now going to be his Truma obligation? So obviously he has to take off Truma's Maaser. Does he also have to take off Truma Gedola? And now we're going to say a Chiddush. The Chiddush is that he took off Truma's Maaser, but he didn't take off Truma Gedola, and still the Maaser Rishon is considered corrected. Now the Gemara says, now how do I know that? If the Levi takes off his Maaser Rishon, he goes out to the field and he takes out the Maaser Rishon, so he's going to be exempt from having to give Truma Gedola. And the Gemara darshens it from a Pasuk. The Torah says that he's going to take off Maaser Mina Maaser. That's a reference to Trumas Maaser. Maaser Mina Maaser, Amatulachavalo Truma Gedola, Trumas Maaser Mina Maaser. So that means to say that under this very strange circumstance, where he took his Maaser Rishon first, he only has to take off Trumas Maaser, he does not have to take off Truma Gedola. So that is a drasha. That's a funny drasha, by the way, because the drasha is addressing the Levi who did incorrectly, meaning he took his Maaser Rishon first. Okay, but still, that's the drasha. So Amalei Rav Papa LaAbaye Yihachi Afilu Dima B'Kri Namili Pater. So Rav Papa says to Abaye, so if what you're saying is correct, so let me understand this better. So that means to say, let's say the grain is processed. The farmer harvested the field and went through all the processing of his grain and brought it into a silo. At which point in time now the grain has the halachic status of being tevel. At which point in time now you formally have to take off the hafresh trumas ha-maisos in the correct order. I mean, truth of the matter is you had to do so beforehand, but now it's digun. Now it is processed grain. And so in order, it has to be bikurim and truma gedola and maaser rishon and trumas maaser. And now under these circumstances, so Rav Papa says to Abaye, so let me get this straight. Under these circumstances, now the Levi goes to the silo, and he takes the grain. So you mean to tell me that he only has to give off Trumas Maaser, and he doesn't have to give Truma Gedola? So Amar Lei, Alech Amar Kra, Mikol Manusechem Tarimu. Oh, to which Abaye says back to Rav Papa, no, under those circumstances, he's got to give both. He's got to give both the Trumas Maaser, and he's also got to give the Truma Gedola as well. So the Gemara says, Umari Isa, wait one second. One drasha tells me that the Levi only has to take off Trumas Maaser. Another drasha tells me they have to take off Trumas Maaser and Truma Gedola. Well, what just happened over here? Meaning, and the distinction is, well, it depends if he took it out in the field or if he took it after it was processed. So what's the difference? Omar Isa, So high idgun, by high low idgun. So the Gemara's response is, I'll tell you the difference. Difference is that when it's processed, so now there's a chovas trumas amaiser. And so once there's a chovas trumas amaiser, so then the Levi has to make sure that he takes off everything, meaning the trumas maiser, which of course he has to take off, but plus the truma gedola, because he took his maiser rishon before the farmer was able to take off the truma gedola. On the other hand, when he goes out to the field, so there's no chovas trumas amaisers yet, and he took his maiser rishon, which in of itself is interesting, that we can call it maiser rishon even though there's no chova as of yet. Okay, but still, he takes his maiser rishon, he brings it home with him, so under those circumstances, because there was no chova yet, so there the other drasha kicks in, which is that he only has to take off trumas maiser, and he does not have to take off truma gedola. Okay, that's the chiddush of the Mishnah. Oh, Meister Sheni, now we go on to the next case of the Mishnah. The next case of the Mishnah is that we are describing Meister Sheni where it was redeemed. So again, in the cycle of Hafrash Shumas and Meisros, in years 1, 2, 4, and 5 of the 7-year Shemitah cycle, so after the farmer gives off Meister Rishon to the Levi, so now what happens is that the next 10% is what's called in Halacha Meister Sheni. Meister Sheni has to be eaten in Yerushalayim. Now that is, at times, can be very inconvenient, meaning every time that you harvest your field, you're going to have to go take your Meister Sheni and bring it to Yerushalayim. And this is 4 out of the 7 Shemitah years. 4 out of the 7 years in the Shemitah cycle. So that's going to be inconvenient. So the Torah recognizes that. And the Torah says that here's what you could do. You can go ahead and you could redeem it. You could take the Kedusha of the Meister Sheni, put it into a coin. And then at your next opportunity, when you go to Yerushalayim, which will be 3 times a year, so you'll bring your coins of your Meister Sheni with you. And you will then spend it on food in Yerushalayim, and you will eating your Meister Sheni in Yerushalayim, or that which you transfer the Meister Sheni, the Kedusha's Meister Sheni in Yerushalayim. Good. So what the Mishnah tells us is that if your storehouse is stored with Meister Sheni that was redeemed, so it's not Muksa. So the Gemara says, again, same question, Pshita. Well, it's obvious. So the Gemara says, okay, so I'll tell you the Chiddush. The Chiddush is that we know the halacha is that when the owner has to redeem his own Meister Sheni, so he has to pay a surcharge of 25%, chomesh. And we go over this time and again, chomesh is 25% in terms of the fractions of the Torah. On another occasion, you can ask me how that works. Anyway, so he has to pay a surcharge of 25%. So that means to say that one could have entertained the idea that if, let's say, he only paid the principal value of his Meister Sheni to redeem it, but he didn't pay the surcharge, so then it's not redeemed. The Chiddush is no. If he paid the Karen, even though he didn't pay the Chomesh, it's still considered redeemed. The Gemara says that's the Chiddush of the Mishnah. About v'hatormos hayavish, now dry tormos. So another listing in the Mishnah of things that are not muksa. So tormos is a bean. It's not that edible, but nevertheless, in its dried state, it's edible. So the Gemara says, Dafka Yavish, it has to be dry, avalachlo, but not if it's moist. My time came damar lo achlo. Because in its moist state, it's so bitter that nobody's going to eat it, and therefore it's moksa. All right, as we now turn to the top of Kuf Chav Chesam and Aleph, avalo as a tevel. And now we're going over things that are moksa, and you're not allowed to move. So over here now, you don't even get to the question of, is it exertion over exertion? Because it's moksa items, and you can't move them. So we're going over the list of items in the Mishnah that you are not allowed to move because they are muksa. And the first thing mentioned in the Mishnah is tevel. That is produce that is untithed. And the question now becomes obvious. Pshita. Lo tzricha betevel tavel midrabanan shezar ba'atzi sheino nakov. So in terms of the case of tevel, we're talking about where it's not talking about just stam tevel because it's too obvious. If it's produce that's untithed, so nobody's allowed to eat it. It's a chiyuv misa b'dei shamayim for somebody to eat tevel. So obviously it's muksa. So what we need to say is that the status of tevel is only on a rabbinic level. How is it only on a rabbinic level? So the Gemara here gives the example. It was planted in a pot where the pot didn't have holes in it. So it's not receiving yanika. It's not receiving its nourishment from the ground. Under those circumstances, it is not chayv in shumas ha-maisos midaraisa. It is chayv in shumas ha-maisos midarabanan. And so despite the fact that the isser is an isser derabanan, so one may have argued, okay, but min haTorah, it's not tevel. No, it's the Isser deRabbanan now makes it something which is forbidden, and therefore it's muksa. V'lo Meister Rishon, continuing. Meister Rishon, where Trumas Meisos was not taken off. Again, the Gemara says, of course that's muksa, because of course that's Aser. So, Pshita, lo tzricha, shidima b'kri, shenato mimeno Meisos, v'lo natla mimeno Truma Gedola. So the Gemara says, the Chiddush of the Mishnah is the following. That the... Levi took his Maaser Rishon first, but here he took it not from the field, but he took it from the pile, meaning after it was processed. And now, after it was processed, he took it home. The Levi took his Maaser Rishon home, and he separated Trumas Maaser, but he didn't separate Truma Gedola. Oh. So, Ma'u Detema Kedama Levi Rapapa La'abayi, Kamash Malan Kedishan Le'abayi. So now we go back to the dialogue between Abayi and Rapapa. Because, remember, Rapapa said to Abayi, what's the difference? Meaning, he thought that if he went to the field, and he took off his Maaser Rishon first, and you're telling me that under those circumstances, taking off Trumas Maaser is sufficient, so isn't the same thing going to be true when he takes from the processed grain? And Rapapa said to him, no. I'm sorry, Abayi says to Rapapa, no, there's a difference. And the Gemara says that that difference is an absolute difference. The distinction is correct. So the Gemara is just learning in the Mishnah that that's what the second half of the Mishnah is coming to tell me. That if the Levi took his Maaser Rishon after it was already processed, so then he has an obligation to take off both Trumas Maaser and Truma Gedola as well. And if he doesn't, it's inedible, it's usher, and therefore it's moksa. Valos a Maaser Sheni that's not redeemed. So the Gemara says, Pshita, if the Maaser Sheni is not redeemed, it cannot be eaten outside of Yerushalayim, of course it's moksa. So the Gemara says, lo nitzruch, the niftiv lo niftiv kehochasan. So that means to say that we redeemed it, but you redeemed it incorrectly. And if you redeem it incorrectly, it's not redeemed. So what are examples of redeeming it incorrectly? Maaser Shepado Gabi Asimon. So let's say, for example, that the Maaser Sheni is redeemed, but it's redeemed over a coin that's not minted. Right? A slug. The Rachmana Amar Vesarta Kesab Yadecha. The Torah says that in terms of the redemption of Maaser Sheni, so you have to take the coin in your hand, and you have to redeem it onto a coin. And coinage is understood to mean it's minted. And so therefore, if it's not minted, it's not a coin halachically, vis-a-vis the redemption of Maaser Sheni. And Davashesh Botsur, it has to have a coin. It has to have a minting on it. So Hekdesh Shechilu Agabi Karka. So that is incorrect redemption in terms of Maaser Sheni. What about Hekdesh? Hekdesh is going to be not redeemed if the person attempts to redeem it over a piece of property. Meaning that when you're redeeming Hekdesh, it has to be redeemed with money. Derachmana Amar V'nasana Kesef V'kamlo. The Torah says that you have to give money in order to redeem Hekdesh. So if I'm trying to redeem the Hekdesh by transferring the Kedusha onto property, it simply doesn't work. Okay, you'll notice over here that when the Gemara cites a pasuk for this halacha of redeeming Hekdesh, so you'll notice that there's no citation on the side in terms of where to find this pasuk. Why is there no citation on the side? Because this is not a actual pasuk. This is just simply a paraphrase. You can see the third Tosos where he discusses this point, where the Gemara over here is not accurately citing a pasuk, just simply paraphrasing a pasuk in terms of speaking to this idea. Okay, and Tosfos over here says that it happens in the Gemara, where the Gemara sometimes doesn't accurately quote a pasuk, it just simply paraphrases. Anyway, below is a luf. We're moving on in the Mishnah to things that also cannot be moved, and that is luf. So the luf is a type of bean. It's not that edible. And the Mishnah says that it is therefore going to be muksa. Tanu Rabbanan, here the Gemara quotes a b'raisa. So, moving the chatzav. These are different types of vegetations. Rashi writes over here, interesting, when it comes to the chatzav, so it happens to be that its roots go straight down into the ground. Yoshua, when he was demarcating the property lines between the Shvatim, so he would use a chatzav plant because its root did not detour in any direction. It just simply went straight down. So it is a great borderline marker. Anyway, so the chatzav can be eaten by the deers. And the chardal, the mustard, we're talking about the mustard seed, so it can be eaten by the doves. Rav Shimon Gamliel says that you can even move shards of glass. Shards of glass are edible. Okay, most translate the ni'imios as an ostrich, so they eat broken glass. Okay, I can't help you in terms of whether that's true nowadays or not. It happens to be that birds eat stones, they do that all the time, but ostriches and broken glass, the Gemara assumes that that's in fact the case. So, anyway, the point of this brisa is that as long as the food is edible by an animal that you own or potentially could own, we're going to get to that point in just a moment, so that food now is going to not be muksa because you're using it to feed your animals. Now, it's true that most people are not housing deers and doves. Well, that's not true by doves and certainly ostriches, but still, the point is that as long as it is a food edible by an animal, so it's not muksa. So Amalei Rabbi Nassan, Alami Ata, Chavili Zmorz, Yatalanim, Imneishu, Maichol Apilin. So Rabbi Nassan says to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, well, the argument really can get absurd. Because what about vines? Now, vines are muksa, right? We talked recently about a vine that was tied to a jug. Okay, but then it's no longer muksa because now it's part and parcel of the jug. But the vines themselves are muksa. But you know, vines are eaten by elephants. So you're ready to tell me now that a vine is not muksa because it can be eaten by an elephant. Okay, and the braisa ends, and Rabbi Nassan just simply says to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, look, your argument now becomes absurd. Meaning, nobody's owning elephants, and nobody's owning ostriches, and where are you going with all this? Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, ne'im ashchichi, pilin lo shchichi. So the Gemara, first of all, defends Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. And the Gemara says, look, ostriches, there are ostriches all over the place. Now, again, not where we live, you got to go to the zoo for that, but there are ostriches everywhere, and meanwhile, when it comes to the elephants, they're really rare animals. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel could see a difference between them. Now the Gemara gets to the point where, are we saying that broken glass is not muksa because you're feeding an ostrich that you actually own? Or does it mean potentially you could own an ostrich? So Amemar offers over here his opinion, which is you have to actually own the ostrich. Meaning the only way to justify the glass not being muksa is if you actually own the ostrich. So Amar Rav Ashi LaMeimer Ela De Kamar LeRabbi Nassan Rav Shimon Gamliel Chavili Zmorz Yatelan Mimneishu Maichol Lepilin I Isle Pil Amai Lo. So the Gemara says, wait one second. So then go back to the end of the Braisa and go back to the exchange between Rabbi Nassan and Rav Shimon Gamliel, where Rabbi Nassan said to Rav Shimon Gamliel, hey, what about vines? You know, elephants can eat vines. If we're talking about a case where you actually own the ostrich, so that means that we're also talking about a case where you actually own the elephant. Well, if you're actually owning the elephant, so then, yes, you need the vines. You need to feed your elephant. So, ela ra'oi hachinami ra'oi. So, in the discussion, it's pretty clear that it didn't mean that you actually own the ostrich. It didn't mean you actually own the elephant. They were talking about, theoretically, if I owned an elephant, I would feed it vines. And if I owned an ostrich, I would be feeding it the broken glass. So, it seems like the Gemara is dismissing Amemar's suggestion that in order for it not to be muksa, you have to actually own the animal. The Gemara says, not necessarily. Anyway, ostrich owning, elephant owning. So who's owning an ostrich? Who's owning an elephant? So it is going to be clear, and the Gemara is going to make this point right about now, and that is that wealthy people own it. So interesting where the Gemara now is addressing the idea that the vast majority are not wealthy. And meanwhile, if a person has broken glass, he could say, look, I'm not a wealthy person, but in principle, I could own an ostrich, even though I can't afford it, and my broken glass is not going to be muksa. So this idea that we're going to treat everybody like royalty, like somebody who's wealthy. So you've heard this idea before, and now what Abai is going to do is he's going to collect all the Tanaim throughout Shas that speak to this idea that we could treat everybody as if he's living in some sort of wealthier class. And Amar Abai, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Akiva, Kulu Sfir Lehu, Kol Yisrael B'nei Malachim Hei. So Abai strings together these Tanayim, and I have not documented, and I cannot give you a number, the number of times throughout Shas that Abai does this, where he strings together various Tanayim who he says are thematically connected. So here's an example, and there are numerous throughout Shas. I just don't have a number to give you. But the Tanayim of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Akiva are all of the opinion that the Jewish people are all B'nai Malachim. Meaning regardless of what they actually earn, regardless of what class they actually are in, halachically everyone can be viewed as a Ben Melech, as the son of a king, as nobility, as royalty. Now Rabbi Shimon Gamliel had Amran. Now we just went over the Shita of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, which is that if I have broken glass, so it's not muksa. Why? Because I can own an ostrich. Most of us are not owning an ostrich. Most of us cannot afford an ostrich. But at least it's within the realm of possibility, and we could treat ourselves all like nobility. Nobility owns ostriches. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says we can all treat ourselves that way. Rabbi Shimon did not. We learned by Shitas Rabbi Shimon. This is earlier in the Masechta. B'nei Malachim Sachan Al Gabei Makoseim Shemen Vered. Rose oil was extraordinarily expensive. Is it muksa? Can you rub it into your skin? Well, the Tanakhama there in the Mishnah said if you're a Ben Melech, you can. Shekein darkin shel b'nei malachim lasuch b'chol. And Rabbi Shimon amar kol Yisrael b'nei malachim heim. And the sheet of Rabbi Shimon is that everybody could rub rose oil into their skin. It's even though it's extraordinarily expensive. And for the rest of us who are going to be buying rose oil, We're only doing it for refuah purposes, but since nobility does it on a regular basis, so for us, we consider ourselves all to be noble, and therefore, halachically, every one of us can rub rose oil into our skin, according to Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Kiva, Tanya. Now, the shitas of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva, we have the following brisa. Harei hashayu noshim bo, elef mana, ulevush itzel labas kuf mana. So, let's say you owe a lot of money, and your creditors are coming after you, and they're taking you to court. And now, the court is going to foreclose against you. Now, if you had property, okay, they'd foreclose against your property. But you don't have property. But it happens to be right now you're wearing a really nice coat. And it's worth 100 mana. And mafshitano so mabishano so itzla rayulo. And so the Tanakama there says, so what the court's going to do now is they're going to say, look, you owe the money. You're wearing a lavish coat. So what we're going to do is you're going to take off your coat. You're, of course, going to be given a substitute. Or you'll buy a regular coat. You'll have to buy it on sale. And obviously cannot be of the same luxury item. And then the difference that you're going to have to give to your creditor. That's the sheet of the Tanakama. And Tanam Yishum Rabbi Yishmal, but Tanam Yishum Rabbi Akiva, Ko Yisrael Ruin, Le'oso Itzdala. And the sheetas of Rabbi Yishmal and Rabbi Akiva is that no. Is that, look, it's a lavish coat, and it's certainly above your pay grade. It's above your luxury style. But nevertheless, they subscribe to this idea that we all can consider ourselves to be nobility. And so therefore, this is a coat that's protecting you from the cold. It is fancier than what you normally wear, but call you shorben name malachim hen. We're all nobility, and that person's entitled to wear such a coat, despite the fact that he is in debt, despite the fact that he foreclosed, that he defaulted on his loan, and they're foreclosing against him. But nevertheless, that's the coat that he's wearing. And yes, it's fancier than what he wears, but call you shorben name malachim hen. So areas of Shabbos and not only that, but mamonos, but monetary law as well. So we see this application. But again, this is a buy now stringing together all these tanaim. Chavile kash vechavile zmoris. We're continuing. We're halfway down in kuf chav chesam at aleph. Tana rabbanan. We have a brisa. Chavile kash vechavile eitzim vechavile zradim. So bundles of these very soft different types of shoots and pieces of wood. So it could be animal fodder. So is it muksa? So it depends how you're going into Shabbos. Imit kinnel amaychol behema metalton osam. If before Shabbos they were set aside as animal fodder, so therefore it's not muksa. V'im lave metalton osam. If, however, going into Shabbos they were stored as firewood, so then they're muksa. Rav Shimon Gamliel omer, chavilem anitalon b'yad echad mutal etaltalon, v'shtei yadayim asal etaltalon. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, we're talking about how big they are. If they're small where they can be handled by one hand, it's not muksa. If they're big where they can only be handled by two hands, then they are muksa. Chavile siya ezo v'karnis ichnisam le'etzim ein mistapik man b'shabbos la'maychol mehema mistapik man b'shabbos. And then three different types of, again, these are very tough pods and it's kind of hard to describe what they are, but they're different types of grass and roots where, again, it depends on what you determine them to be before Shabbos. If you determine them to be animal fodder, so it's not muksa. If you wanted to use it as firewood, so then it is muksa. V'kotim b'yad v'ochel. Now, as far as you're concerned, in other words, for these pods, if you cut them and you want to eat them, you may do so. You have to cut them with your hand. You have to snap them with your hand. Uvavash lo yikam b'kli. You can't cut it with a kli. Umola v'ochel. Now, in terms of rolling the pods, in order to take the seeds out of the pods, so you roll them. You cannot use a machine or any kind of utensil to do this. You must do so with your hands. Now, according to the sheet of the Chachamim, so they also allow you to roll it open, but only with the tips of your fingers. You can't even use your whole hand. In other words, in order not to violate the Isser of Dash, one of the Malachas of Shabbos, that we go back to Daf Ayin Gimel, and the 39 Malachas of Shabbos, and one of them is Dash, and Dash is basically taking the kernel from the chaff. Over here, however, you are not doing this on a broad scale. You're only doing this with a pod, and you're only doing this with your fingers, and according to the Chachamim, you're only doing this with your fingertips. So now, this is something which is no longer a Malacha, not only not a Malacha, it's Mutal Lagamrei. As long as you do these kinds of deviations, so then, under those circumstances, it would be okay to roll it over. V'chein ba'amita, v'chein ba'pigam, v'chein b'shar minei tavlin. And then the Braisa concludes, and the same thing you could do with these types of legumes as well. Now, what are we describing over here? So, These are terms that the Gemara is going to define, but I say definition, I mean it's going to define into Aramaic. So for the Aramaics amongst us and the Aramaic speakers, it's going to be very helpful. For the rest of us, it's not going to be so helpful. So my Amita, so Amita is what? It's Nina. Oh, so Rashi says it's mint. Okay, so I'm going to be 1 for 3 right now. Sia Amrav Yehuda Tzasre. Ezov Avrasa. So the Gemara gives the Aramaic definitions of Sia and Ezov as being Tzasre and Avrasa. So corn is Kornisa Shema. And cornice is Kornisa. Okay, good. So there comes another one of the pods that are being defined. So I'm right now 1 for 4. I got the mint. Vahud Amaru Man by Kornisa. So the Gemara says, the person who is looking to sell Kornisa Vishtakech Chashe. And when he went to the market, he found Chashe. Okay, so it's something else. So Alasia Tzasre Ezov Avrasa Kornisa Chashe. So the Gemara now revises its definitions, and the Gemara says that the Sia is defined as Sasri, and Ezov is defined as Avrasa, and Kornisa is defined as Chashi. Let us continue. Itmar Basar Maliach Mutal Atatal B'Shabbos. So, if I have salted meat, so the meat is not cooked, but it's salted. So, is it Muksa? So, the Mishnah says, sorry, it's not a Mishnah. The Gemara says that you're allowed to move it on Shabbos. The fact that it is salted, it means that it can be eaten, admittedly, it's not that exciting, but still, it's mutter, you're allowed to move it on Shabbos. Tofu. Now, let's say it's a raw piece of meat that is not yet salted, and it's now sitting there on Shabbos. So, is it muksa? A debate amongst the Amoraim. Rav Huna Amar mutter l'tautel, Rav Chista Amar usser l'tautelo. Machlokis Rav Huna, Rav Chista, Rav Huna says it's not muksa. Rav Chista says it is muksa. Rav Huna Amar mutter l'tautelo. So, the Rav Huna is of the opinion that you're allowed to move the meat. Now the Gemara says, "Vaha Rav Huna Tamid de Rav Hava." Now the Gemara says, "Wait 1 second. We know that Rav Huna was a student of Rav, Ravka Rav Yehuda Sfirulei. They say Muksa. So, and we also know that Rav subscribes to the viewpoint of Rav Yehuda, who takes the wider definition of Muksa. And so, therefore, if I asked Rav, let's start with Rav Yehuda. If I asked Rav Yehuda, is the non-salted raw meat on Shabbos Muksa? So his response, of course, would be yes, because he has a wider range of what falls under Muksa. Now, if Rav subscribes to Rav Yehuda, which he does, so then Rav would be in agreement. And now if Rav Huna is a student of Rav, so then Rav Huna should be in agreement with that as well. So it all confuses us because Rav Huna says that it's not Muksa. And meanwhile, based on what we think we've just put together as a Shalshelis, as a tradition, so we have Rav Huna passing like Rav, who passing like Rav Yehuda, who subscribes to the larger definition of Muksa. So raw meat should fall under the category of Muksa, according to Rav Huna. So the Gemara here gives an interesting distinction. Rav's position on Muksa is a hybrid position, meaning that really Rav subscribes to the viewpoint of Rabbi Shimon, limiting the scope of Muksa. But that's only vis-a-vis moving items so that you can get to certain places. Tzarech gufo, tzarech mekamo, he subscribes to Rabbi Shimon. However, when it comes to consuming, so there he takes a stricter viewpoint of Rabbi Yehuda. So that means to say that if it's something which is going to be consumed, so there he is going to subscribe to Rav Yehuda's more broader application of Muksa. Okay, interesting, this hybrid approach to Muksa. The Gemara subscribes this to Rav, and so now Rav Huna is fine, because Rav Huna is consistent. Meaning vis-a-vis moving the meat to the side, so that would be acceptable. Vis-a-vis consuming the meat, again, it's something... Either you would eat it or you give it to your animal, but in vis-a-vis consuming it, you can't eat it because in terms of achila, Rav subscribes to Rav Yehuda. Rav Chista Amar Asa L'Tatalo. So the Gemara says, now Rav Chista says you are forbidden from moving the raw meat, meaning Rav Chista says it's Muksa. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. V'arav Yitzchak Barami Yikla Lebe Rav Chista V'chaza Hu Bar Ivza Da'vakam Atatalem Shimsha L'Tula V'am Rav Chista Chisar Kis Kachazin and Hacha. So there was an episode, an actual incident, where they went to Rav Chista's house. There was a goose. It was raw. It was shechted. It wasn't salted, and it was out in the sun. And if it stayed out in the sun, it would have decomposed. It would have spoiled. So they moved it from the sun into the shade. And Rav Chista's response is, "Yeah, that was a great idea. You're going to lose a lot of money if you leave it out there in the sun." And Rav Chista did not hesitate a moment to move the meat of this goose, even though it was raw and it was unsalted. So the Gemara says that's now inconsistent with what we think we know. We think that according to Rav Chista, raw meat should be muksa. So Shani Bar Ivza, the Chazil Umsa. So the Gemara says that when it comes to the raw meat of a goose, So that is something which is edible. People can chew on it, even in its raw state, even without being salted. And so therefore, that is the exception. Meaning the general rule is that raw meat is going to be muksa according to Rav Chisda, but the goose meat is not going to be muksa because it is edible. Just as an interesting point over here that I'll add as well, and that is Tosfos over here. You're eating raw meat of a goose that has not been salted. Isn't there a blood consideration? Meaning dam, the dam that's in the goose, right? Whenever we shep animals, so animals and birds, so there has to be a salting in order to extract the blood, because the blood is usser. So this is what's called dam evarim. This is not dam nefesh, but still, dam evarim is usser. So isn't that going to be an issue? So Tosfos addresses that over here super briefly. Third to last Tosfos on the Amud. You can see the Tosfos. We're going to go on. We have, Baruch Hashem, a lot of Gemara to go through. Tana Rabbanan, we are in the bottom of the Amud. Still continuing our discussion regarding various food items that are not muksa. Dag maliach. We're now on to salted fish. So the fish is not cooked. It's just been salted. So mutal lataltalo. So there you're allowed to move the fish because a fish in a salted state is edible. Dag tafel also lataltalo. But if it's raw fish that is not salted, so then it is muksa. Meat, whether it is cooked, I'm sorry, whether it is salted or not salted, let me go in the right order. Whether it's not salted or whether it's salted, so you're allowed to move it. The Tanur Rabbanan, we learned in a, and by the way, you see this in the parentheses, meaning that we just pointed out that, generally speaking, non-salted meat is not edible. The goose may be the exception. So in the parentheses, it says that this follows the viewpoint of Rabbi Shimon, which is much more lenient when it comes to muksa. Tana Rabbanan, last line of the Amud. Metaltan says, "Samos men meshu maichel leklavin." Bones can be consumed by dogs. As we turn to the top of Kuf Chav Chesam and Beis, basa tafuch men meshu maichel lechaya. Meat that is already starting to decompose, so you can give it to your wild animals. May megulim men meshu inruim lechatul. And water that was left exposed, which is a sakana in the time of the Gemara, any water that was left exposed and unsupervised, so that water is assumed to be poisonous. And so the Braisa says, but still, your cat can handle it. So the Gemara says, Rishim Gamlil, Amar Kolatzman, Asa Lishos Mimnea Sakana. Rishim Gamlil says, no, you can't have that around. Meaning, it is a sakana to have that kind of water around. So let's not even get into a muksa discussion, meaning you should not be having that around. It is also legami just to even have it in your property. And so it goes without saying that according to Rishim and Gamliel, so it's going to be viewed as muksa. It's something that you should have gotten rid of to begin with. Ad kan, that takes us to the end of our first discussion for today. Let's continue. We are in the Mishnah on the top of the Amud Beis. Kofen esasalif ne'afrochim kadeshialu v'yardu tanagolos. I'm sorry, Kadeshi Alu V'Yardu. This is a Mishnah that should sound familiar, although it has been some time since we saw this Mishnah. This Mishnah takes us all the way back to the third parak of Masechet Shabbos, Parak Kira, where we saw this Mishnah before, and that is that, let's say, the chicks need to get up into the coop, and they need like a little stepladder. So what you're allowed to do, says the Mishnah, is you're allowed to take the basket, overturn it, in front of the coop, and let the chickens hop now onto the basket. Now, what is the concern? What's the consideration? So Rashi reminds us that the consideration would be the first Rashi in the Mishnah. Ashmin and the kli nitel ladavar she'enu nitel b'Shabbos. That you could take a kli and you can use it, and it could serve as something which is muksa. Meaning the chicks themselves are muksa, but nevertheless the kli could be used even for a muksa purpose. Now this is not a unanimous viewpoint. There are other viewpoints as well over there. But we're not going to go over the Gemara back in the third parak. But please take a look back over there, because the way that Rashi presents it is just one way to present it. There are other ways to present this as well. Continuing in the Mishnah. Tarnagol shabarcha. So let's say the chicken starts running away. So dochen so achitekanes. So what you could do is you could push it in the right direction. So you're not going to pick it up, but you can push it in the right direction. Madadin agalim v'sayachin. One is allowed to basically grab the neck of these young animals, right? The young horse, all right, a foal. So the so you can grab it on its neck in order to help it walk. Isha madas bana. Same thing is true regarding a mother and her son. Grab his arm and help him walk. I'm Rabbi Yehuda. I'm a sai bizman she hu no tel achas umeniach achas. That's only if the kid can take steps. Aval im haya gorer aser. But if the mother's dragging the kid, so then that's going to be aser. What's going to end up happening is that the mother is going to pick the child up and is going to end up actually carrying the child. Now, this gets into the topic of Chai Noseis Atzmo. I'll touch on it quickly in just a moment. We're going to come back to that. I'm reviewing Amar Rabbi Hamish and Afla Le'ama Samayim. May be karm b'ksasos u'maniach tachteha v'im alta alta. So Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav says a halacha regarding an animal that was got stuck in the river, and it's Shabbos, and you can't pick the animal up. Picking the animal up would be a violation of Otsa'ah. So what can you do? So you could put pillows and basically things that the animal could step on in order so that the animal can get out of the river. So you throw it into the river, and if the animal now is able to escape from the river, do so. Meaning, to the best of your ability, help the animal get out of the river and recover. Meisvei, the Gemara challenges with the Braisa Behemish and Afalamas, Amai Mosel, Aparnas, Bemkoma, Bishul Shalot Tamus. The Braisa says that under these circumstances where the animal gets stuck in the river, so there's nothing you could do to help the animal in terms of recovering the animal or getting the animal out of the river. So what you're going to do is you're going to feed the animal in the river, send it some food, and then after Shabbos, you'll pick it up. So Parnasa in Karim Muksasim Lo. So over here, the Braisa is giving us a much narrower allowance of what one can do. According to the Braisa, the only thing you could do is only feed it there, but you cannot facilitate and help it get out of the water, not by throwing it pillows and cushions. So Lokasha had the Efshar Beparnasa, had the Efshar Beparnasa. Efshar Beparnasa in Vilo, maybe Karim Muksasim, so many Echtechteha. So the Gemara says, well, no, the way we're going to understand the Braisa in coordination with Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav is that basically here's going to be our steps, protocols. Number one, if you don't have to bring in carbon exhaustos and you can get away with feeding the animal over there in the river for the remainder of Shabbos, that's better. If that's unavailable, so then and the animal is simply not going to survive there in the river, so now you can go to step number two, which is bring in the pillows and cushions and allow it to try to step out, stepping onto the pillows and cushions. So the Gemara says, V'hakam avata kli mehecha no. So the Gemara says, okay, but similar to the case of the chicken and the baskets and the overturned baskets, by putting the pillows over there, so basically what you're doing now is that you're being mevata kli mehecha no. You're taking a kli that is totally a non-muksa item on Shabbos, putting it under the footing of the animal, thereby solidifying that kli into that place. Now, I'm going to go back to a Rashi that we saw some time ago, Rashi back on Mem Gimel, where Rashi says over there, and that's a form of binyan. It's not exactly binyan. It's a gzera derabanan. It looks like binyan. Anyway, see the Rashi over there for a description of what that looks like. Anyway, so it's like you're being bone. It's like you're building. So it's rabbinically prohibited to do so. We could say that simply. So the Gemara says, Savar mevato kli meichano derabanan. So the Gemara says, okay, so it's an issa derabanan. But sar balechaim daraisa. But then on the other hand, the Gemara says that causing pain to an animal is a daraisa consideration. V'asi daraisa v'dachi derabanan. So now it's just a question of understanding the values. On one hand, sar balechaim is an issa daraisa. On the other hand, mevato kli meichano is only an issa derabanan. So the sar balechaim is going to trump the consideration of mevato kli meichano. Now remember, picking the animal up and moving it, that would be an issa d'oraisa, that would be otsa, right? Not always, meaning you could be in a karmelous situation. And so the Gemara is just assuming that picking it up would be an issa d'oraisa. It's not always going to be the case, but anyway. But in a scenario where all I'm doing is just simply putting down the pillows and cushions and thereby violating the issa of being mevato kli meichano, that's an issa d'rabanan, and that's going to fall by the wayside of tsar balei chayim. Tsar balei chayim is inisa daraisa. The Gemara says it very clearly over here. Where in the Torah does the Torah say that tsar balei chayim is inisa daraisa? So it doesn't say clearly in the Torah. There are many different mitzvahs and isurim that one can point to in the Torah that speaks to the idea of tsar balei chayim, but nevertheless, the Torah never articulates that causing pain to an animal is inisa daraisa. So Rashi over here notes, you can see the Rashi inside tsar balei chayim daraisa. He writes, Shenemar azov ta azov imo. So we know that if an animal is buckling under the burden that he's under, so what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to help distribute the weight, help the animal get up. You don't want the pain to cause the animal. So again, the Torah over there does not actually clearly state that Tzar Bali Chaim is an Issa Daraisa, but we're gleaning from that mitzvah that there is this idea of Tzar Bali Chaim. And whether or not Tzar Bali Chaim is an Issa Daraisa or an Issa Darabanan is also controversial. It's also debatable, but anyway, but the Gemara over here assumes that that's the way to understand our Mishnah and our Braisa. Tarnagol Shabarcha, if the chicken starts running away, Dochin in, Madadin lo. So, what you could do is basically you could push the chicken in the right direction, but what you can't do is you can't grab the chicken. You can't grab it by the wing, you can't grab it by the foot. So, Tanin lahad the Tan Rabbana. Now, this is a diuk, it's a critical reading of the Mishnah, but the Gemara says, but we're going to support it because we have a braisa. Modadin. So one can, in order to direct an animal, so one can grab it by a leg or whatever the case is, in order to direct it, and one can do so in the chaser, but one cannot do that with the tarnagolas. Now tarnagolas, my time alone. Now why can you not do it with the chicken? So Amar Abai Mishum de Makpe Nafshe. So what's going to happen is the following, that when you try to grab the chicken, the chicken is going to fight back. He's going to really resist. And take a look at Rashi over here, the Makpe Nafshe. Magbas Asma Min Aretz V'Nimsa Zeh Metato. So the chicken is going to basically pick himself up off the ground, and you're going to end up carrying. Aval Ivzim K'she'ochzim B'Kapeyem Hein Mahalchim B'Ragleyem. Now, when it comes to other things, like geese, for example, so they're still going to walk. Omiyo B'Rishos Arabim Lo Mishum Shemi Yagbiyem Min Aretz V'Nimsa Nos An. Now, to do this in the Rishus HaRabim, says Rashi, is going to be a problem. Because if the chicken now is going to basically extricate himself from the ground, so that means to say that eventually what's going to end up happening is you're going to carry the chicken. And carrying the chicken, Rashi writes, the stomach of Rabban, the plika led the Rebbe Nassim, ba'amatsniya, gabe amotzi chayv of, bein chayin, bein shchutin, chayv, ha'ishim adas bana, filib Rishus HaRabim. Dinami magbiya lei chayin osei tasmo, da'achim okminin hasam, deba adam modi Rabban le Rebbe Nassim. If I could just simply summarize the Rashi over here, when it comes to carrying, let me go back one step. The principle of Chai Nosei Es Atzmo, if I carry somebody who can walk on his own, so that it's not an Issa D'Oraisa, or it still may be an Issa D'Rabbanan, but it's not an Issa D'Oraisa, to carry somebody that can walk on their own. So, you remember that it was a machlokes between Rabbi Nassan and the Chachamim. But Rashi says, but also remember that the only debate between the Chachamim and Rabbi Nassan is talking about the lifting of an animal. Meaning by lifting of an animal, so the Chachamim say, Chaynose es Atzmo does not apply, and therefore it's an Issa D'Oraisa, and Rabbi Nassan says the principle of Chaynose es Atzmo does apply, and it therefore is an Issa D'Rabbanan at worst. But when it comes to a human, so Rashi reminds us, the Gemara's conclusion back then, this goes back to Tzadi Dalid, is that everyone's in agreement that we apply the principle of Chai Nosei Es Atzmo when it comes to a human. So in the worst case scenario, even if you're picking the kid up, meaning the human child, so we have the principle of Chai Nosei Es Atzmo. Ma She'en Kein when it comes to an animal, so there we have a debate. So over here, in terms of our Braisa saying that you can't go ahead and grab the chicken, because then the chicken is going to fly up, you're going to end up carrying it, and our Braisa subscribes to the viewpoint of the Chachamim that we don't apply the principle of Chai Nosei Es Atzmo when it comes to animals. Hopefully all that was clear. Tini Chada. We go back to the Gemara. One Braisa says, Madin Mehem of Chai Vav Bechaser Avala Bereshus HaRabim. So the first Braisa says that you can grab a wing or whatever, an extremity of the animal in order to direct it in the Chaser, not in the Bereshus HaRabim. And the Isha Madas Bana Bereshus HaRabim Ve'in Tzar Chomer Bechaser. A woman can lead her son, lead her young toddler in the Rishus HaRabim, and it goes without saying, she could do so in the Chatzar as well. V'tan Yidach and another Braisa, in Okrim Behema V'chai V'of B'chatzar, Aval Dochen Behem, Shechansu. So, and the second Braisa says that you cannot grab any part of the animal to direct it. The only thing you can do is push it in the direction. So, Hagufa Kasher, Amart, in Okrim, Aval Diduya Madadin. So this second Braisa is confusing because the second Braisa says that you can't pick it up, which sounds like you can direct it by grabbing it. V'hada amar dochin in madadin lo. But then the Braisa says, oh, you can only push it, but you can't grab it. So Amar Abai, Seif Asal and Tanagola. So Abai says the end of the Braisa is talking about the chicken, And as we just pointed out, when it comes to the chicken, so then grabbing it is going to be a problem, because once you grab it, it's going to fly, and you're going to end up carrying it. And the author of this braisa is the Shita of the Chachamim. Amar Abaye Hayman Deshachit Tarnagolos LeChavshinu LeKarei Ba'ara. One last comment about the chicken, and that is when you shech the chicken, so either lock the chicken into the ground, Inami Gidol Luhu, sorry, Nadal Luhu Medal, or pick it up off the ground, meaning when you're shechting a chicken, obviously we're not talking about on Shabbos, we're talking about in general, when you're shechting a chicken, so you have to be aware of the fact that it's going to jump up, like we just described on Shabbos. And so therefore, when it comes to Shechita, that's a bad thing, because a quick movement before Shechita may cause the neck and the simanim to dislocate, and this is going to be the psul of ikor. When shechting an animal or a bird, there are five psulim to take into consideration. Five disqualifications. One of them is ikor simanim, where the trachea or the esophagus gets dislocated. That's a simple way to describe what ikor is. And so because of the chicken and its jerking motions, so you have to make sure that either the feet are locked into the ground or the feet are off the ground. But the idea that the chicken, right before you sheft it, the feet are going to be on the ground, so that'll be a great opportunity for the chicken to make a quick movement right before the shechita, disqualifying the shechita. The Gemara makes exactly this point. The Duma Manachlu L'Tufrei Ba'ara V'Akalu Simanim, because it's going to take its talons, its claws, and it's going to dig it into the ground right before shechita, making a quick sudden movement, and that will be a disqualification of the shechita. Okay, next Mishnah. Ein Miyaldinus Abayim Abiyam Tov. In terms of assisting an animal giving birth on Yom Tov, so one is not allowed to do so. Rashi writes, Ein Miyaldinus Abayim Abiyam Tov. So the Ika Tirchi Yisera. So the way Rashi describes it, the consideration of a year's Tirchi Yisera, we're going back to the general theme of this perek, says Rashi. And that is that it's overexertion. So over here, to be miyale, to actually deliver, would be a violation of Yontav, and it goes without saying Shabbos as well, because it would be an issue of Tirchi Yisera, it's just too much exertion. Ava Mesadin, Umiyaldin Se'isha B'Shabbos. So, but when it comes to a woman giving birth, a human, so there, so you do all kinds of assistance. V'korin L'chachma, Mimakom L'makom, and you call the midwife, Umechan L'Lesa Shabbos, and we're talking about Sakana Safashos, this is a precarious situation. And so, therefore, you do Chilul Shabbos. The Koshin is a Tibur, and you can tie up the umbilical cord. Rabbi Yossi Amar Avchotchen. Rabbi Yossi says you can cut the umbilical cord. The Chol Sarchi Mila Osim Shabbos, and all Mila requirements, all Mila activities, are going to be done on Shabbos. The next parak, which starts a couple of days from now, on Kuf Lamed, that's Rabbi Lazar de Mila. That is the parak here in Shabbos dedicated to the mitzvah of Mila. The reason why that parak comes up is because of this Mishnah over here. This Mishnah is the last Mishnah of the 18th parak of Shabbos. And so this segues into the next parak. We have a lot to look forward to. Let us cover a little bit of the Gemara. Ketzad Misa'adin. Now, when we're talking about giving an assistance, what do we mean by that? So Rabbi Yehuda Amar Ochezes Avlad Shelo Yipol La'aretz. So Rabbi Yehuda says that what we're going to do is that we are going to make sure that the fetus doesn't actually hit the ground and make a blunt trauma impact with the ground. Rav Nachman Amar Dochik Basar Kadei Sheyetze Avlad. Rav Nachman says pushing on the stomach in order to help facilitate the fetus to come out. Tanya Kavasi the Rav Yehuda Ketzad Misa'adin. Here, the Braisa is going to be supportive of Rav Yehuda. What exactly is Sa'ada, is support? So Ochzen Es Avlad Shalo Yipol La'aretz, making sure that the baby does not hit the ground. V'nofet Lo Bechotmo. And what you can do also is blow air into its nose in order to help it start breathing. You can also start the nursing process. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that we would create compassion of the animal on Yantav. Now, what exactly does that mean? So a number of ways on the farm in which they had the animal not reject its offspring. One is that they would take a clump of salt and they would put it in the uterus immediately postpartum. That's salt on the wound, literally. And the reason that it was done is that the mother then is going to remember the pain that she endured in having it. And somehow, in ways that I cannot explain, but somehow that'll create more connection between mother and its new offspring. And also on top of that, to sprinkle some of the afterbirth on the newborn, that's also going to create connection. Now this is talking about a kosher animal, about tamei lo. But this is not; these strategies are not going to work by a non-kosher animal. My time tamei lo merachka vlada. Because first of all, the fourth position of a non-kosher animal is that there is no rejection of mother and the offspring. And the imarachka vlada lo mekarva. And if there is rejection, so there's no way to reconnect the two. Okay, that's all on the farm. I hope that was helpful to you. I visited the farm many times, but I can't testify to anything that we just went through in the Gemara. But the Mialdin Saisha, let's continue. Let's get to the two dots. So Michti Tanalui Mialdin Saisha Bekoron Le Chachamami Makom LaMakom. So the Braisa says that that in terms of delivering a baby from a woman, a human, so there on Shabbos, you do everything. So Koron Le Chachamami Makom LaMakom, you call the midwife regardless of where she's coming from. She comes outside of Tchum, it doesn't matter. Umechan allows a Shabbos and a full violation of Shabbos, meaning we're here dealing with Sakanas Nefashos, the mother's life is in a precarious situation. We could also talk about the fetus as well, but right now just focusing on the mother. And so all Shabbos halachas are going to be suspended in order to preserve her life. Lasui imai, lasui haditan rabbanan. And here are now practical examples of what falls under the category of chil Shabbos that can be done. Let's say there needs more light. So on Shabbos, you light a fire in order to create more illumination. Now if oil is needed, so her friend is going to bring oil in, and she's going to bring it in her hand. Now if she can't carry enough in her hand, so she'll take more in her hair. And if she needs more oil than that, so bring it in a kli, meaning as much as necessary. So let's say this woman is about to give birth and there is more light that's necessary, so you light it. So the Gemara says, I get it, meaning you violate Shabbos in order to facilitate the birth. So if I need more light, I'm going to light a fire. What is this example giving us that we wouldn't have figured out already? So the Gemara says, Lotzricha besuma. So the Gemara says that the woman who's delivering happens to be blind. So I might have thought over here that, look, the midwife is saying, I don't need any more light. The woman who's delivering, the woman who's giving birth, so she, even though she's blind, she's saying she does need more light. So she's saying about the midwife needs more light. So kamash malan isuve miyasve daita. So what it's going to do is it's going to take some of the anxiety and the stress off of the woman who is in fact giving birth. Meaning even though she is not the direct recipient and the direct beneficiary of the light, but the fact that she now in her head thinks that the midwife is going to see better and her chances of having a successful delivery are going to improve, that is enough for Chil Shabbos. So she's now going to be assuaged by the idea that now the people around me can see better, they're going to do a better job, even if they themselves don't think it's necessary, as long as she, the one who's in critical condition, thinks it's necessary. So that also is going to be grounds for the violation of Shabbos. The Gemara says that's the extra chiddush from there. We have more chiddushim to go through, but this is a good place to stop. And this is a good time to recap. The first part that we did of today's daf, we're going all the way back to Kufra Zayin Amid Beis, is the various discussions in the Mishnah of things you can move and cannot move from the storehouse in order to make room for the guests or in order to make room for the shear. So what can I move, what can I not move? The Mishnah gave us a listing. And in the Gemara, so for the first part of today's shear, we covered all the things that were listed in the Mishnah, the agricultural items that are not muksa, the Truma Tahara, the Demai, the Maaser Rishon, the Maaser Sheni, and the Hekdesh are all redeemed. And what are the Chidushim in those cases in the Mishnah? And then as we turn to the top of Kuf Chav Ches Amud Aleph, we went over the items that are, in fact, Muksa, and you cannot move. The Tevel, the Maaser Rishon, where Truma was not taken off, the Maaser Sheni, and the Hekdesh that were not redeemed. So those are, in fact, Muksa, and we went over what the Chidushim there as well. We went over various foods that are not really edible, but can be eaten by various animals. and we got into the discussion of the glass shards that can be eaten by the ostrich. And there is a sheet of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel that says, well, even though ostriches are generally owned by nobility, but we could all own an ostrich, and we're all b'nei malachim, and therefore the shards of glass are not going to be considered muksa to us. And that engendered the discussion in the Gemara regarding who subscribes to this idea that every Jew can view themselves halachically as being b'nei malachim. Abayi strung together four different Tanaim who subscribe to this viewpoint. Different areas in halacha, but they all subscribe to this general viewpoint. We went on and we described various pods that either could be used as animal fodder or as firewood, and it depends basically as how you set it aside for Shabbos, and that will determine its muksa status. On top of that, we also talked about how to open up the pods on Shabbos in order to get the seeds inside. The meats, raw meats, its status of muksa, raw fish, bones, mayim magulim, what are all those statuses going to be? The muksa, and that takes us to the top of the Amud Beis. On the top of the Amud Beis, we talked about basically how to farm your animals on Shabbos, how to help the chickens get up into the coop, how to navigate lost animals and get them back to where they need to be, and a woman in terms of escorting her son around and the concerns and the considerations of if the child can walk, so then she can guide him, she can hold his hand. If the child cannot walk, she cannot pick him up. The Gemara's discussion about what to do if your animal gets stuck in the river, and the issues of Tsar Balei Chayim, and the counter consideration of throwing in pillows and cushions in order to allow the animal to get out, and the balance between, on one hand, Tsar Balei Chayim, on the other hand, violating Shabbos, Mevatel Kli Mehechano. We continued, and we discussed various animals, specifically the chicken, where if I were to grab it by its wing, it's going to jump up, and I'm going to end up carrying it, and that would be a violation of Otsah if, in fact, you're in a Rishus HaRabin. And finally, the last thing that we covered this morning is the Mishnah regarding the birthing of animals and the birthing of humans. So for the birthing of animals, so you cannot be there for the full facilitation of the birthing of an animal on Yontov nor on Shabbos, but what you're allowed to do is Sa'ad. You can do some sort of assistance and support. And the Gemara went through what exactly that means. When it comes to a woman, everything can be done for the woman who's going to be given birth, including Chilul Shabbos. And when we say including Chilul Shabbos, so we just started our discussion in terms of what is even included in Chilul Shabbos aside from the obvious.